This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, Larry. Come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes,
it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
Do you actually need a camera for tout, or is it like part of the program?
Tomorrow,
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
I was just the man you see and the place to be.
Do you listen at all when I speak on the show?
I'm not the one who thrives on whining about carriages that are 3 inches from my fucking car.
So if it's too much for you and your big cock of a walk Knight to Columbus backpack,
when does it end, JR?
Bring the carriage back to the fucking thing, then what do you want? What do you want?
When does it end?
You're making the poor guy making minimum wage while you're sitting there with our mento going through the coffers.
Party people! The place to be.
5 years. 5 years we've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
It's not Austin in LA. It's not Cabana in Chicago. It's not Conrad down in Alabama. Place to Be Nation presents Scott Criscolo and JT Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to a great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am Jesse here, coming to get you here from the PTBN studios. Joining me, as always, my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 556 of the longest running episodic motherfucking gold standard. How are you? Look at this. We go from having a month off to back-to-back weeks.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
In the middle of three. We're a little podcast sandwich and the delightful meat inside that sandwich will be joining us in a moment. Good to have him back as always. But yeah, it's three straight here to make up for our month of inactivity on the show. But we're excited into a very fun time period. We got through the doldrums of the fall of 1990 and arrived in the safe, warm bosom of 1991 DOTAF. A little bit of a rough show last week, but it was always great to have Kelly Nelson with us. That was fun.
Yep.
A little throwback. And joining us tonight, he is the host of Greetings from Allentown. And I guess, I don't know if it's considered a subsidiary or alternate feed, but Greetings from Allentown, GFA Live. He's on that as well. And of course, the Adams Division podcast with our buddy Steve Bennett. He is here tonight because we are on NBC, and that is Mr. Peter Winston. Peter, how are you?
I am nothing but a piece of meat. But I was trying to remember who was meat. Was that Stasiak or was that Chaz or whoever it was?
No, Stasiak. Yep. Chaz was Chaz was Beaver Cleavage.
Okay, sorry. 1999 WWF leaves me very confused and baffled. But luckily we're in 1991, where clearly they're not doing anything controversial at all, right?
Nope, not at all.
It's a very safe year. Very safe year.
Very American. Very patriotic.
Anyway, so if Peter's here, you know we're in prime time or late night on NBC. This time around is prime time because we're looking at the February 1991 main event episode. It's the final main event, and we're actually coming across the final NBC shows in the near future as well. So kind of sad. I do remember watching this one live in prime time on a Friday night on NBC as we really start to ramp up now toward WrestleMania. Scott, anything else going on this evening you want to discuss?
Absolutely. There were two house, of course this was taped, so there are two live house shows going on, so the roster was split in half. We'll start East Coast, then go West Coast. So on this night, 8,000 were jammed inside the birthplace of the Survivor Series, the Coliseum in Richfield, Ohio.
Oh, wow. That's a low crowd. They could socially distance even back then.
I know, right? Exactly. I know, right? 8,000 on a Friday night. That's kind of for a Friday night, too. It's kind of crazy. Hmm. Here's your card. The Barbarian defeated Coco Beware. Jim Duggan defeated General Adnan. The Undertaker defeated Tugboat. Roddy Piper defeated our Intercontinental Champion, Mr. Perfect, via countout. The Rockers defeated Demolition, which they couldn't do 3 years earlier when it actually mattered. The Big Boss Man defeated Haku. The Nasty Boys defeated the Bushwhackers. And in the main event, our world champion, Sergeant Slaughter, defeated the Ultimate Warrior in a steel cage match. We are now going to go out to the coast. Arco Arena in Sacramento. 10,200 for that show. Here's your card. The Mountie defeated Sam Houston. The Legion of Doom defeated... God, Jesus, listen to this match. Oh, God. In a handicap match, the LOD defeated Mr. Fuji, Kato, and subbing for Tanaka, Bob Bradley.
Oh, boy. That's a tough
one. I wonder if he had those awesome cheetah tights on.
Or the Battle Cat outfit.
Or the Battle Cat outfit. Oh, my God. That's awful. Bob Bradley. You poor Sacramentoans. Jake, we'll get a little bit better here. Jake Roberts defeated Rick Martel via disqualification. Hulk Hogan defeated Earthquake in a stretcher match. Our World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, the Hart Foundation, defeated Power and Glory. Dino Bravo defeated Tito Santana by countout. And in the main event, the Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich, defeated the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, after Virgil interfered. So there were your live house show cards on this night. JR, any Coons tidbits?
Yeah, a couple other facts first. Just one bit here. On the 126-91 Superstars, Dave Boy Smith pinned Joe Turner with a running power slam, 222. During the bout, Vince McMahon announced that Jack Tunney was considering implementing an instant replay rule in the WWF as a result of the main event at the Royal Rumble. So we'll see if that leads to anything down the line.
You would have thought that Joe Turner would have lost via the shake, rattle, and roll. Anyway, that's a joke straight out of the 50s. Moving on.
Oh, that's our wheelhouse sometimes on these shows. All right, Herb Coons, we have one set of notes here tonight from January 31st, 1991. The Herbster runs down the full results from Clash of Champions Dixie Dynamite. Last episode, we talked about his preview of that show. Changed a bit from what he posted last week. Noticeable his absence was Michael Wall Street, although Alexander York was there. Mike might be having some contractual problems, and he may have already quit. So we'll find that out. Luger and Sting versus Doom started out with some balanced exchanges, test of strength. So he just kind of recaps. He doesn't really give many thoughts. So I'm just going to, sorry to do this to you, Peter, and skimp you on the Herb notes, but let's get to his final thoughts on the Clash. Overall, certainly better than the last one, despite Dusty's horrendous commentary and a few fumbled spots. I think that things are going in a reasonable direction. I would hope they don't match up Scott and Rick again in the next few months, because then work a few later in the year reminding us that Rick hasn't pinned Scott Steiner. If Scott were to work with Flair in a two-month program, say, he could iron out whatever kinks are still left in his working. After witnessing Dusty's commentary, I can't help remembering a description of his character I once read. He comes across as a white man pretending to be a black man, pretending to be a white man, pretending to be a black man. That sums it up. So take that how you will from Herb. Any thoughts on that Clash of Champions, Peter? Anything you want to discuss?
I barely remember anything from that Clash of Champions. Like, I don't even know if I've even watched it since, you know, they added the clashes on the network all those years ago. Is that the one where Paul Heyman has the
arm wrestling?
Paulie Dangerously, yeah, has the arm wrestling match with Missy, and Missy has like the slightly revealing top? Like,
mm-hmm.
I think that, okay. So I remember one thing from that show, and it's basically, boobs. So great, great, great show, WCW.
It's like, Kelly said the same thing last week when we were talking about it. He's like, oh, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen this one. So a very forgettable clash, apparently. But
yeah.
All right, where are we at? American Angels, a movie starring Magnificent Mimi and other glow stars, has been released direct to home video. Check your local video store.
All right.
That's tremendous.
What a sell. It almost sounds like he's getting like a commission off of it or something, the way he presents it there to us. Apparently, Tito Santana's agreed to stay in the WWF in a slightly demoted role. I don't know how much more demoted poor Tito can get at this point. WWF has a main event tomorrow night, 8 p.m. on NBC. Matches on the show taped yesterday will be Sergeant Slaughter versus Jim Duggan, Hulk Hogan and Tugboat versus Earthquake and Dino Bravo, and the Legion of Doom versus Orient Express. Might also have a Hogan run-in save for Duggan to potentially help build WrestleMania. Jack Tunney will officially announce the main event. Dustin Rhodes won't be in WCW until the end of February. Lots of talk that Kerry Von Erich is on his way out of the WWF. He hasn't been involved in a program for a while, and nothing will be set up using him. This seems likely. Of course, not totally accurate. Lou Thesz officially retired at the age of 74, having just worked in Japan in late December. The end of a lengthy career for Lou. And I don't know if this is an indicator of the general trend, but TSN, our Canadian national sports network, which airs 1 hour of WWF wrestling per week, is thinking about dropping the product. There's a lot of pressure internally and externally to drop the show because of the Sergeant Slaughter character. Although the current contract will be in effect for a fair while, the network still has some choices to make. Apparently, the WWF contract only says you'll receive X number of shows, and that may just be shown unedited. That means the network could opt out and just not show the program. So, pushing his agenda regarding this Slaughter stuff there for Herb, not a fan. Any thoughts on those notes? Not too much to dive into here tonight.
Doesn't surprise me that Canada would feel the same way as the network in the United States. The very network that this show is airing on was not happy about it either. So it doesn't surprise me that TSN would be up in arms.
A lot of controversy around this angle, which we can talk about as we go on. We kind of waited on it in our last episode, Peter, but we can get your thoughts as we get there. All right. So that's all said. Why don't we go ahead and take a moment? So we did this last time. I think we had one of these shows. It's a quick one, so we're not going to really take a break later. So, Scott, why don't you tell us what's going on in the pop culture corner here tonight?
All right. Thank you. Different week than what we had with Kelly last week. So different stuff. Surface with the first time. Surface.
Yeah, I forgot the song. You got to write it down for me. I can't remember that. It was like 20 minutes ago you told me.
You know what? This is the first time you've forgotten the song. The first time by Surface, number one. Number two, CNC Music Factory with Gonna Make You Sweat. Everybody thinks now. Love Will Never Do Without You, the former number one, drops to three by Janet. Sensitivity by Peter's favorite guy, Ralph Tresvant, at number four.
Wasn't he the goalie for the Flyers in that year?
Yeah. Play That Funky Music by Vanilla Ice at five. After the Rain by Nelson at number six. I'm Not in Love by Will to Power at seven. All the Man That I Need by Whitney Houston. So we had Janet and Whitney in the top 10.
Is that a remake of the 10cc version, I'm Not in Love, or is it like a separate song?
Not in Love. You know what? I think it's because Will to Power was big on covers because they covered Baby I Love Your Way, the Peter Frampton song. That might be the cover. I'll have to look it up. All the Man That I Need by Whitney at number eight. Just Another Dream by Kathy Dennis at number nine. And High Enough,
Rocky Dennis, I believe, is her nickname.
Yes, Damn Yankees at number 10. So there's your top 10 that started the following day, Saturday, February 2nd. Let's take a look at the movies, JR, and Shot in the Dark on what number one might be.
I'm gonna guess it's still Home Alone.
It is 250. Peter, it's been number one like 15 straight weeks. $215 million Home Alone has made. It is still number one. The rest of the top eight, Popcorn at number eight, which I've never even heard of. Kindergarten Cop at seven. Green Card at six.
Was it Unlimited Popcorn?
Maybe. Once Around at five. Awakenings at four. White Fang, number three. Dances with Wolves hit the $100 million mark at number two. And Home Alone at number one. Your football season is over. And we all know what happened in Super Bowl. We talked about it last week, JR. The conference championships, but we all know what happened in Super Bowl 25 down in Tampa, wide right, and the New York Football Giants are your world champions. They defeated the Buffalo Bills 20-19, and to that point, probably the most exciting Super Bowl ever to that point.
Are we gonna guess to see who won the Pro Bowl to see if Rosero can get one over on me this week?
I'm going NFC. NFC.
In the NBA on this evening, on this Friday night, there were eight games. And guess what? Even though Kevin Gamble led with 25 points, Robert Parrish with 14 boards, the Charlotte Hornets stunned the Celtics 92-91.
Suck it, Bird.
The Celtics were 32-12. The Hornets were 14-29, but the Hornets.
They're just tanking. They get ready for Grandmama.
That's right.
Peter, do you want to take a stab at who won the Pro Bowl?
I looked it up, and the AFC won. But I'm impressed with Jim Kelly winning the MVP of the Pro Bowl a week after losing the Super Bowl.
Yeah, getting his heart shut out. Yeah, pretty much. The high scorer on this day was, of all people, holy crap. Is that who I think it is? I think it is. Let's see.
Muggsy?
Nope. The General, Sherman Douglas, Syracuse alum, had 35 for the Heat, who beat the Indiana Pacers 116-113.
He's really moving on up.
Yeah. Let me check. Who was the high scorer for the Hornets? got to give them a little love here because it's the
one. Got to be Kelly Trepuka.
Was it the puke? Let's see. Was it the puke? Let's see. The high score was
Frank Wachowski.
Well, five in double figures. Mike Jaminski.
Oh, that was my other choice. Jaminski and Wachowski.
He wasn't a bad player. He was a pretty good player.
No, he was good.
He had 16 from the field. Yeah, he had 18. J.R. Reed and Rex Chapman, who has a great Twitter, 14 apiece. Johnny Newman, former Nick, with 13. And Kendall Gill, the former Fighting Illini, had 12 off the bench.
They have the structure of the team there. Like, that's the team pretty much. Like, once Grandmama and then Zoe come in, that ends up like being pretty good in the mid-90s. And, like, the pieces are already all there. All those guys, once they add Del Curry, but Gill and J.R. Reed and Jaminski, like, those dudes are all on that team that ends up beating the Celtics in the playoffs and having a little run there until George Shinn decided to trade everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Muggsy had 4 in that game, but he did have 7 assists. And Del Curry was on the team. He had 6 points. Were they both threes? No, they didn't shoot any threes. But
I loved all those guys. That was a great team. I mean, so really, they didn't have much turnover between then and when they get LJ and Zoe. Like, those are all the dudes.
No, those are all the dudes. I agree. For the Celtics, Reggie, who was the highest? Well, we said Kevin Gamble had 25. Reggie Lewis had 15. Robert Parrish, 12. Brian Shaw, 11. Kevin McHale had 20 off the bench. I think Bird's back was right. Wasn't this year Bird's back was fucked? Yeah.
This is when it all started. Yeah.
Yeah. Bird's back was fucked at that point. The leading score, as I said, Sherman Douglas 35. Michael had 31. Actually, all the studs had big games that night. Michael had 31. Bulls won. Magic had 30. Lakers won. Drexler had 32. Portland won. So it was a big night for the big stars. Celtics were still leading the Atlantic, though, at 32-12. Pistons led the Central 33-13, the Spurs 31-11, and wow. I mean, I knew they had a good year that year, but after 46 games, the Portland Trail Blazers are 38-8.
Monsters, yeah.
Lakers were 33-11, and they were 4 games back. It's crazy. And finally, in the National Hockey League, I think the streak is over, Mr. Winston, because finally you are on, and the Bruins did not play. Bruins did not play in this night. There were 2 games, though. Red Wings beat the Maple Leafs 4-1, and the Oilers beat the Blackhawks 4-3 in overtime. Chicago leading the Norris with 72 points. Kings lead the Smythe with 61. The Bruins do lead the Adams, though, with 68 points, 5 ahead of the piece-of-shit Canadians. And the Rangers with a 3-point lead on Philly in the Patrick. And that's it for the Pop Culture Corner. So we didn't say where tonight's show was. Tonight's show was actually at the Coliseum in Macon, Georgia. So we're in the deep. Speaking of WCW, we're in the deep south tonight for our show.
Well, I was glad to see that the WWF could run at least one Coliseum in 1991.
Yes. Vince McMahon and the Hot Rod, Roddy Piper, are your announcers. JR, let's dive in.
All right, we are back on NBC in prime time for the final time as we head into that hot stretch down the road to WrestleMania. We get a big video package highlighting Hulk Hogan's USO tour set to a blaring Stars and Stripes Forever. Just really fucking in your ears with that version. Going all in on this feud and show is really highly focused around this whole thing. Opening animation, we get a fired up Vince McMahon and Roddy Piper welcoming us in to the night's action, setting up the card, telling us Jack Tunney will reveal who will challenge Sergeant Slaughter at WrestleMania. Piper also says we'll find out how rice and fish stack up against meat and potatoes in the tag match this evening. So some great insight there from Piper. Then we head right to the ring for our opening match. This feud's still going as Hulk Hogan and Tugboat take on Earthquake and Dino Bravo. Another iteration. Quake is still awesome, though. Still has a great look. The entrance is cool. Bravo just feels so damn stale at this point. Tugboat's not much better, honestly. Huge pop for Hogan, still on top of the world. This role, very wonky 90 for him. Vince does some back-of-the-envelope math to sort out the weight of each team and lets us know what's going on there. Bravo shows off some power on Hulk, but Hulk comes right back and waxes him. Piper talks about Dino Bravo's lift record, still a thing. Vince says that was some time ago. He's gotten quite stronger. Hogan cleans house on both men. Jimmy's wilding out, as well as the crowd. They're all fired up. Tugboat comes in and works the arm, but Bravo escapes and tags Quake. Tugboat lands a shot and tags Hogan to a big pop. He starts unloading on Quake. Hulk cleans up both guys again, actually slams Quake on the first try for one. So you know this feud is in its dying days. We're not getting the 3 or 4 slam attempts. Hogan is all over Quake, mauling him across the ring, peppering him in the corner. Tugger is back in. He runs into a boot. Quake takes over. Quake and Bravo double team him, start quick tagging, controlling with power strikes. Tugboat dodges an elbow. Bravo catches the tag and keeps him grounded. We get some more double team offense until Tugboat comes back again in a cool little power struggle. Bravo grabs Jimmy's megaphone and bops Tugboat with it as we go to break. As we come back, Quake and Bravo are still in control, double teaming and pounding away. Bravo is drooling at one point. He's so fucking bloated. He's barely poured into those tights. Looks awful. Bravo hooks a weak-looking chancery, but Tugboat powers through for a tag, but the ref misses it. We get more double-teaming by Quake and Bravo. Quake cues up the splash, but Hogan comes in and punches him in the gut. That stops it. Bravo and Hogan both get tags. Hogan mows through him, hits the big boot, and rolls him up to win with the monster pop. Perfectly fine tag match, buoyed by the veteran work and a hot crowd. All strikes, but it worked for these guys, so whatever. Hogan still hasn't pinned Quake on TV or pay-per-view. So, and that was, you know, it really for... national TV for these guys. But again, it's a good transition. It gets them off this feud finally on national TV, prep for Mania. Quake deserves something new too. It's been a great feud for him, but he's been married to Hogan since April. So time to move on. Tugboat and Bravo just simply exist. Anyone could be in those roles. And one weird tick I've noticed is that Hogan seems to always pin Bravo with a roll up. Like, I think he did it at Survivor Series. He did it on that. I think he pinned him with it too on the, house show we saw them fight, and he does it again here. I don't know what it is, like if it was easy to roll up or didn't want to leg drop him. Like, I don't understand why they seem to tend to go to that finish, these two guys. 2.5 stars to me, Scott.
Yeah, I noticed that trope too about like Bravo can't like get pinned by normal, or like almost like Hogan's protecting him. It's very strange. Your match time, 8:56. I mean, yeah, this was pretty much you know, standard TV fare. This feud has reached us. I mean, I hate to say it because I felt like it was still hot a couple months ago, but I think maybe finally the Hogan earthquake thing has reached its end. And we felt like it had some legs a couple months earlier, and we had talked about on previous episodes about maybe earthquake winning the title instead of if there was no war and all, and maybe it would have made Herb happy if we had won, if a Canadian guy was champion instead. Yeah, I mean, at this point, it definitely feels like this feud has reached the end of the line. And we'll obviously know that by the end of the show.
And they're still doing the stretcher stuff locally. Yeah. Obviously, they were doing the one in Long Island. We talked about that coming up. So it's kind of Hogan's final days. I don't know if they're just trying to keep him. I guess the plan, we talked about it. I think the plan off of Mania was for him and Slaughter to feud after. So maybe they didn't want to, you know, get into it on the house shows before then.
Right.
So they do. Yeah, they marry him with Quake pretty much right up until the doorstep of Mania.
Pretty much, yeah. And, yeah, Bravo. I mean, I that drooling thing, he gets him all of a sudden, like just drool is waggling everywhere. I'm like, what a goddamn mess. Jesus, Dino. What the fuck? Yeah, nothing crazy here, Peter. Typical TV fare, but the Hogan earthquake saga, I think, finally has reached the end of the line.
He was drooling like Dino from the Flintstones. You know, that's why they call him Dino Bravo, but... You call him like an idiot or a bloated bitch or whatever, but Dino Bravo at heart was a smart guy, because when he makes his entrance, you ever notice he does that weird lap thing where he runs around in a circle? Makes him very hard to shoot at for any potential assassin. All right.
To me, that's the best thing he does, is that run in the circles. I pop for that every time. The rest of it sucks. Everything else.
Absolutely.
He does.
It reminds me of the kids running in a circle in the Home Improvement theme around season 5 that I always thought was stupid back then, but now I've tied it to Dino Bravo, so it's funny again. I mean, he got Dino Bravo and Tugboat in a featured bout on NBC. I mean, no wonder why they're like, get this shit off our network immediately. And I wonder, you really couldn't just do the one-on-one blow-off with Hogan and Earthquake here, because you did Hogan and Savage on this same program a year ago, which was the big feud from the year before. I mean, I'm just going to discount Zeus for that. And like, why couldn't you do it? Like, and you could have really made Hogan look strong going into WrestleMania 7. You know, it's the super American babyface. Dino and Earthquake, they're like the newfound East-West connection with Quebec and British Columbia, but he's not a Canadian Earthquake anymore, apparently. And as I always do, I have to point out that John Tenter is 27 years old here, so he's the one the rest of them are calling kid in the match.
It's insane.
Tugboat's pants are very, very high, yet he wears a belt. There's a lot going on with Tugboat, but what the one thing I like about Tugboat in this match is not him doing the Ricky Morton face in peril thing, which was kind of embarrassing. It's when he does the double boot spot with Hogan. I always like when Hogan would do that with like some jabron like Tugboat or Hillbilly Jim, and they would do like the whole Rockettes thing. I don't know. I always like that. But Hogan looks super strong here. I love when he came in and made the save before Earthquake could do the splash on Tugboat. You know, why bother waiting? But yeah, it's brutal. Bravo won't take the leg drop, and it's got to be a Montreal thing. I mean, it's got
to
be some
something in there, because it's like he never does it to him. He always rolls him up. It's so weird.
It is. It's got to be some weird Montreal thing where like Pat Patterson is afraid he's going to be assassinated by like by gangsters if Bravo gets booked to lose via the leg drop. But apparently gangsters got no problem with a roll up, or in this case. What did he win with? Like an elbow drop or something?
No, it's the roll up. It's always the roll up. Always the roll up.
Yeah.
I mean, I give this 2 stars, but the one thing I could have used was Tugboat posing more after the bout. Because whenever Hogan's tag team partner has to pose, that's some just delightful awkwardness. And especially when it's like a 380-pound man whose belt is about at his nipples.
I'm with you. I don't know why they didn't just do the blow off here. And they could have framed it as a SummerSlam rematch, right? Bravo and Tugboat in the corners and everything. Yeah. Unless they just still were clinging to that loop with the stretcher matches, I guess. But I mean, Hogan never really pins Quake. I haven't seen those stretcher matches, but I assume they're not. Are they pin and then the stretcher, or they just put him on the stretcher? You know, it seems like he never actually pins the guy. I guess they were just trying to keep him strong and figured Hogan had done enough damage that it mattered, you know, for it to matter.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Hogan always had problems with those guys born in Canada, whether it was Dino Bravo, Roddy Piper, or John Tenta.
None of them will lay down.
Yeah.
All right. We get clips from the Royal Rumble. We see how everything unfolded with Warrior Savage and Sergeant Slaughter. And then Mean Gene is with the Sarge and General Adnan. He's ranting to get us started. Gene takes Sarge to the task. Sarge shuts him up, says it doesn't matter how he came to power and what he used to become champion. What matters is he is a champion. In the past, champions played by the same rules, but not anymore. Now we play by Slaughter's rules. It may be unconventional and unnecessary and brutal, but he doesn't care. They're effective. Form coalitions to stop him and see you feel how effective the rules are. Tonight, for his first title defense, he chose primetime TV to show the world and dug in that people. What happens when people don't play by his rules? I'll show everyone what kind of reign he'll have and what kind of leader he will be, and he'll be champ for life. I thought this was a really great asshole delusional promo work by Slaughter. Really out there. So, I mean, say what you want about the Iraqi war aspects of the character. Like, his promo work has been quite good. You know, Herb called him washed up or whatever in his notes, and maybe he was for a couple bits of this return. We talked about some of the rough matches, but he was also married to Nikolai. So I'm curious to see, like, you know, how he picks up, because he's gotten into shape. He's cutting some great promos and he's taking what's given to him and running with it. So I'm a little bit torn. While the source material is tough, I think his performance has been quite good, Peter. What do you think of his promo and what's your feelings on that?
I thought it was really good, but I could not get out of my head the image of, because with this being NBC, it's kind of its own universe, and I picture that person who watched the WWF in like 84 and 85 and then dropped out shortly thereafter and now has decided to tune in again right now, and they see this Sergeant Slaughter promo and they're like, what the hell happened to this guy between like then and now? But I mean, that person probably doesn't exist, but
correct.
To your point that you've made. I mean, he kind of played his way into shape, mm-hmm, after a while. And yeah, he came in looking like Santa Claus and then got into better shape for the Hogan program. Of course, he had plenty of motivation given the kind of push he got.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the promo was solid.
All right, that sets us up for our World Wrestling Federation title match. It is Sergeant Slaughter's first official TV title defense with Adnan. He's out there to take on Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who's also out to Sergeant Slaughter's forever, and he has Hulk Hogan in tow with him. So, big night for the Hulkster already. He's toting the US flag. The crowd's going nuts. The jingoism hot tonight. After a break, Hogan's gone, and we're underway. The crowd is raucous with the USA chants. We start a lockup. Duggan overpowers the champ and has him rattled. Sarge recovers. Slugs away in the corner, but Duggan comes flying back with a wild flurry of strikes, looking sharp. Great atmosphere on the show. Duggan continues to batter Sarge, driving him to the floor in a nasty bump. Duggan tries to bring Sarge back in, but Adnan hooks his ankle, and Duggan falls on top for two. Adnan gets on the apron and holds Duggan, but Hacksaw moves, and Sarge collides with the General, who slowly slumps to the floor. Duggan keeps hammering away on Slaughter with an array of strikes, and Sarge eventually catches him with the right hand to get to work. Mainly punches and chokes, and then focuses on the back with his bullying, rule-breaking offense. Duggan hulks up and catches him with a series of punches, sends him flying to the corner and up and over to the floor. Duggan follows out and shoots him to the steps, and then the post as Adnan stalking him. Duggan jaws with Adnan as Sarge grabs a chair and bashes him in the head with it to draw the disqualification. Sarge keeps battering Duggan with a chair and the riding crop until Hogan comes out to make the save. Sarge cracks him with a chair and now spits on Hogan as well and Duggan. Hogan crawls up with Slaughter and Adnan are long gone. Fun brawl, a lot of strikes. They were well done. The crowd ate it up. I get that Sarge doesn't care about winning and just wants to play by his rules, but I think he could at least have him win by count out or something here just to give him the actual win. It's kind of soft to have Duggan beat him. They're doing a great job, though, of frenzying up the crowd with this Americana stuff. Like, however you feel about it, again, like, they're going all in. Vince is all in on commentary, just going fucking bananas. The crowd is there. Vince is crying about standing beside your fellow man in Americana. He's, like, just eating all this up. The crowd is into it. It's a real interesting angle and psychological experience, the way they're going about it. Is it low common denominator stuff? Yes, but it's effective as of now, anyway. And the crowd is into it. It's Hogan's wheelhouse. He's knocking it out of the park. Slaughter's embracing it. So it's kind of crazy, but it's working right now, Scott. 2.5 stars for me.
Star and a half for me. Your match time, 6:50. This was just a simple TV match for Slaughter. I agree that I think Duggan should have, or Slaughter should have won in some capacity here. They're all in on, even though by the time we got to early mid-February, Iraq was pretty much losing. So the fucking thing was starting to lose its steam. But Vince definitely stepped on the gas. But I want to talk about Slaughter in terms of, like, in-ring for a minute, because we talked, JR, at the end of 90. He was like, Bravo, Hercules level of gasness. Mm-hmm. And he definitely, kind of like Boss Man, as 90 progressed going into 91, kind of lost some of the flab and definitely got into working shape. So I'll definitely give him that. All the other stuff aside, Slaughter definitely looks a lot better in the ring. And he should have won this match. I think he should have won clean, to be honest with you. What does Duggan eat any of this shit for, to be honest with you?
I'm okay with him not winning clean, though, only to push, like, his rules thing, right? That's what they're playing up, is that he, unless you have the ref distracted or something and Adnan hits him, I'd be fine with any kind of finish as long as Slaughter actually wins and he dictates it.
Yeah, that's true. What do you think, Peter?
Well, seeing Hogan as the flag bearer, I was not expecting that, because I thought they were just going to keep him totally away, obviously, except for the post-match stuff. Anytime Duggan gets a title shot, I immediately think of, I have Jesse's voice in my head, like, wouldn't it be a disgrace if Duggan won the title? And you just don't think of, because of the way he's portrayed, you don't really think of him as a threat to the title. But I was also thinking about how, as they're going towards WrestleMania and they actually tease Duggan as a potential number one contender.
Yes.
Like, and then mm-hmm. he ends up, I think he broadcasts the opening match at yep. WrestleMania 7. He doesn't have a match on there. It finally hit me why that was. And they can't have Super American Babyface coming out before Hogan.
Right.
Like, that had to have been it. So you get Duggan on TV now as the Super baby face taking on Slaughter. And yeah, this is him just being the dick champion who loses by DQ every time, because that exploiting that rule. Although he looks good in the curly boots. I mean, we're foreshadowing the return of somebody, maybe. And I'm glad he brought back that corner bump that he would do, where he would just go flying over it for a 300-pound man. Taking that bump,
it's
just incredible.
Yeah.
But the chair to the head spot is very jarring through 2020 eyes, which I guess...
It was a week, though. That didn't, I don't know, he didn't really hit it very hard.
Oh, are you saying that General Adnan didn't lay in it?
Yeah, he's not exactly bashing his fucking head in. It's an interesting progression he's gone through, right? They kind of started with Nikolai. He's like the low-level Americana guy. And then you get Duggan, who's the next tier up, and then eventually to Hogan. So you can see the progression of feuds they've given him to work his way up. And I thought Duggan was actually a good use of a guy here. Because he's believable enough that he... I mean, look. Sergeant Slaughter just won the fucking title, right? So is it that out of the realm possibility that Duggan can maybe win it? So it's a pretty good choice when you factor in everything that goes with it to have him be the guy that gets this match and be kind of the forebearer to the Hogan piece of it. So I kind of liked him as the choice too.
Yeah, I mean, this match was fine, I guess. I mean, there was nothing too special and nothing too abhorrent either. I mean, yeah, the angle's a bit tasteless, but for God's sake, so, you know... I think people should get over it. It's professional wrestling, which, you know, these days has can't even put fans on little Zoom cameras to simulate a crowd without stupid things happening.
Right. No, I mean, and we talked about this with Kelly. It's like it's the history of wrestling embedded in that, right? I mean, this is what it's always been. It just never was on the scale. Like they never did anything. They've had little bits and pieces, but never something this on this grand of a push and scale on national TV and pay-per-view.
And never when the war was actually going on.
Right,
like, I don't think they were running, you know, Mussolini angles during World War II. Like here,
Cold War though, they were. I mean, they were running Russian stuff in the '80s. So
that's true, but there wasn't like you know troops in harm's way the same way. And you got a freaking manager there out there in Adnan who literally looks like Saddam Hussein's body double. It's not like they were running out, you know, Ho Chi Minh lookalikes in the late 60s and running angles on Vietnam. I mean, that's why this is so much more jarring than some of the other, you know, Russia or, you know, foreign bad guy stuff.
Right. Well, we'll see how it progresses and how things move forward. But as of right now, it's an interesting tact. But again, it's the crowds are into it. So. All right, Gene is with the Legion of Doom. They give their usual promo, mixing in some more patriotism about American products versus Japanese outputs. A clear theme to the show, by the way, it's throughout all of this, is America versus the world. Lots of car puns from everyone here. That brings us to our final match of the night. It is the Legion of Doom taking on the Orient Express. Waste no time getting right back to the action as Fuji leads the Orient Express to the ring. Animal and Kato start off as Piper makes fun of the fish, or makes his fish versus meat comparison again. Animal shows off his power as Kato does whatever he can to stick and move. Animal hits a power slam that ends up with all four in the ring, and the Legion of Doom clean house. They send Tanaka flying with a huge double back body drop. Vince thinks Duggan and Hogan are the top contenders to be named by Tunney. Piper thinks it could be Savage or Warrior as well. Hawk and Tanaka reset. It's more the same as Hawk uses his power strikes. Fuji ties up Hawk and the Express get a blip of offense, but Hawk ends that quickly and cleans the ring. Animal throws Kato back inside, and Hawk levels him with a back out with a clothesline. Animal crushes him on the outside in a really fun sequence, just pinballing him back and forth with clotheslines. Animal and Tanaka get us going again. Animal cuts him down with a clothesline. We get all four in again as Fuji sneaks on the apron, throws some salt in Animal's eyes. Tanaka gets a sidekick. The Express gets to work with some double-team offense, focusing on the eyes and the back. Animal hits a clothesline. He tags Hawk, who cleans house on both Orient Express and Fuji. A moment later, Kato goes up and back down with the Doomsday device, and that is that. Pretty fun semi-squash for Legion of Doom. They were on fire. The crowd loved it. Orient Express bumped around like fucking crazy for them. Ton of power moves on display. A good national showcase for LOD, really, in front of this crowd and audience seeing them. I went 2 stars, Peter. This is fine.
Boy, am I glad that Pat Tanaka was able to make the show, unlike that house show card where they had Bob Bradley filling in for him. Legion of Doom is patriotic baby faces. That was something that I didn't remember. But then again, they didn't have those expensive Japanese toys when they were kids. They had to play with the stupid little dummies. What? I don't know. I like the Orient Express very much as a team. I mean, it's effectively bad company after all. Mm-hmm. People cry about like Power and Glory not getting their due. It's like, I say, what about the Orient Express? But then I remember, oh yeah, that's right, because Fuji was pretty much a terrible manager. Mm-hmm. I like the little inside out sequence with Diamond where Animal was on the outside and Hawk was on the inside, so he was getting it. And Pat Tanaka, just a guy who, I swear to God, if he come along like 20, 25 years later, things would have been very, very different in his career, because somebody of his size, I mean, coming up in the 80s, it wasn't going to work for him as a singles wrestler. Like, I could see him now, well, maybe not now, but, you know, in a more modern era, being a bigger deal. But yeah, this was a very dominating match where LOD wins with the Doomsday Device and everything. And now that I think about it, this is probably what Hogan should have been doing in that opening match. And yeah, he was plenty dominant there. And this is two and a half stars. And Scott, I don't know, this is one of the better LOD, like, dominating performances that they ever had in this run.
Yeah, they squashed him here. 5:11, your match time. Maybe if Bob Bradley was in this match, it would have been a hell of a lot more competitive. this was just a good way to end the show. LOD is clearly the team that you're going to see as the year progresses, being shot up the ladder on the babyface side for tags. It's Hawking Animal. It's a Legion of Doom. And we would see a match similar to this at WrestleMania with somebody else. But, this is your typical NBC show ender, quick squash to put over somebody, whether it's a heel or babyface, in this case, a babyface team. And that's pretty much it there. I mean, obviously, this was definitely a better match than what J.R. Kelly and I watched last week with LOD and Demolition. that was a mess. I enjoyed the squash. It was fun and a good way to end the show. Crowd was hot for it. One star. That's about it. That's all it needed.
Yeah, I mean, just a beating. This is kind of the Legion of Doom's wheelhouse. So it's like a hot, revved up crowd, whether it's piped or not, piped in. But the atmosphere suits them much better than some of those, like that Demolition House Show match and other like longer form matches. Like, this is them. Like, just out there with the red hot crowd, a well lit arena, just destroying guys, throwing them around that are bumping like crazy. This is a really cool showcase. Maybe one of the better ones in the Saturday Night Main Event canon, honestly. We haven't seen like a ton of just like destruction squashes like this. So it was kind of cool. All right, Mean Gene's in the ring with Jack Tunney. Gene runs out potential contenders and notes that Hulk Hogan never got his rematch after WrestleMania 6. Same goes to Ultimate Warrior after Royal Rumble, and Duggan just beat Slaughter, and, you know, Savage, too. He was proclaimed number one contender if Slaughter had won the title. So a lot of strong contenders. Tunney takes a beat and makes official announcement after intense deliberations that Hulk Hogan will challenge Sergeant Slaughter in Los Angeles, and that is very well received. Scott, any thoughts on this little segment here with Tunney?
Well, it's nice having Jack Tunney out once in a while to, you know, poorly deliver a line. But
what you wish for? 91 is a very Tunney year.
Yeah, it is very. Yeah. So if you like the true president of the WWF, get used to it, because you're going to see a lot of them throughout 91. I mean, obviously, worst kept secret. We knew this was coming. So it was nice to just officially have it. And then we can go on a nice 7-week build. So.
And I like that they mixed in the other contenders and made it like it was, you know, they could have easily just said he won the Rumble and he gets the title shot. But they, you know, they made it like, okay, here's some guys that are all in the mix. They all deserve some consideration. And here's so.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I like that.
Jack Tunney badly needed a haircut, which I know I'm telegraphing one of the awards here. But I friggin' Mean Gene, who I very rarely criticize him, but him in his friggin' 32-minute preamble, where he's like Robin Leach at WrestleMania 4, whereas, blah, 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 whereas. And then it takes Tunney about 15 seconds, and then he's out of there. I mean, like he doesn't even want the ice cubes to melt in his drink backstage. I did think Hogan called him Zach Tunney for a second, and I had to slow down the audio, which, come on, Preppy, give me the title shot.
All right, Mooney's in the back with Slaughter and Adnan. Sarge says, let the fans cheer now because it won't last long. Hulk has never faced someone like him who will stop at nothing, defend what is his. He'll stoop to the lowest depths. They'll have no stomach for true conflict and never savor the true taste of victory over Sarge. The belt is his. He doesn't have to share it. He doesn't care if public sentiment is in his favor. Hogan and the Puka Maniacs are infidels, and only acceptable terms are Hogan's unconditional surrender. It's been a big night for Slaughter and Hogan, and I thought Slaughter delivered again here with this promo, Scott.
Yeah, it's Slaughter. Now that you know, now he has a pointed guy that he can go after. This was definitely needed. It was time to unveil the worst kept secret in the company. We have our main event for WrestleMania. Let's pull the ripcord and let him go. So it's nice that Slaughter's promos now are going to be just instead of just general hatred of America, we now have general hatred of the face of America. So let's just get the ball rolling and get this going. What do you think, Peter? Nice to be focused.
I mean, he threw himself into that character. I mean, if controversial or not, he just said, what, screw it. I'm nearing the end of the line, and I'm just gonna go for it here.
Yeah, I mean, make it count.
I got one question though, quickly. Before I want to go back to Gene and Jack Tunney for a sec. In the beginning, that dig. I mean, was it just a fact that Gene was saying, or do you think that dig where he goes, Hulk Hogan never got his title shot back against Ultimate Warrior? You think that was supposed to be a dig at a future thing, or you think that was just means he meant to just say that for the sake of the fact that Hogan was viable for this match, or do you think there was something to that? Because I hear him say it, and I'm thinking, where he says, Tunney, he never got his title shot.
Tunney went on TV the week after WrestleMania 6 and said, I will not sanction a rematch between these two, and didn't really make a lot of sense, and WWF's institutional memory was not particularly strong at that time.
That's true.
Anything.
I don't think it's anything beyond them just trying to, because he even says Duggan won tonight. Like, I think they were just trying to show why all four of those guys were contenders. I mean, he could have just said Hogan won the Rumble, and that probably would have been fine, but I think he was just trying to prove that all four guys had a legit claim to that Mania slot.
It would have been great if Tito Santana had got the shot after what Herb said about him in the notes. Demoted. getting demoted.
Herb is like Francesa, Mike Francesa level mush. So.
He is. Huge for Tito Santana.
All right. Our final segment here. Mean Gene is back in the ring, working hard tonight, Gene. With Hogan in the ring, he's fired up along with the crowd. He says Slaughter and Anon can only feel him breathing down their neck. Tunney made the match, and they go to war at Mania. Hogan talks up his USO tour, puts over the military families that are fighting. Sarge has the gall to desecrate the country and the flag, but him and his Hulkamaniacs and Harley Davidsons are coming after him at Mania. Sarge acts like he's the commander-in-chief of the Dirty F and playing by his rules. Hogan says, and by the way, I think he said commander and chief, not in. Hogan thinks Sarge may try to gag his maniacs with gallons of oil or fire missiles at them, but he'll take his Patriot missile arms and shoot them down. Hogan rules, and Sarge can't do anything about it. Hulk pledges that he'll be the next champion. He also leads the crowd to the Pledge of Allegiance. Vintage Hogan here. We saw some of the weird comparisons, but that's typical Hogan, especially on NBC. He's always digging into those weird puns. But they're ramping the fuck out of the Americana aspect of this whole thing. They're going whole hog. The crowd loves it. The night was dedicated to Hogan and all about making him the top dog again, as it was always meant to be, apparently. They're going all in to make him, why he's the number one contender, to book him that way, to present him that way, and to get him back on top of the promotion. And they're going to use all this Americana shit to get him there. Hogan marches around the flag as Vince and Piper close us out. Peter, what did you think of this final Hogan segment?
I thought it was great. And there's a certain symmetry to it because of how Slaughter, back in 84, when right after he turned babyface twice, led the crowd in Allentown in the Pledge of Allegiance. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't think it was, a wink and a nod towards fans who care about history, but I'm going to take it as such.
I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
But again, like Slaughter, now Hogan now has a focused, he'd been saying some stuff about Slaughter anyway, but now that there's a reason, again, similar to the Slaughter promo, it's time to pull the ripcord and get this thing going.
Mm-hmm.
We got 7 weeks. Let's do it.
And they started early, which is good. I mean, they definitely start, it was good to use this show, national TV, and get this announcement out there. Like, they had never really used Saturday's Main Event or the Main Event this way to kick off, this big program and make the official announcement. So I thought that was really well done. All right, so that'll do it. Let's get to our awards, and we'll wrap things up. Match of the night to me was Doug and Slaughter.
Really?
I kind of dug the opener. But I mean, oh man,
I just like the heat and even on the last Slaughter and the finish, with the stuff with Hogan and everything. The opener was just such a paint by numbers match to me. Like, there wasn't, you could live without ever seeing that match.
That's true.
I still go with the opener because it leads to the weird situation where I'm putting a Dino Bravo and Tugboat match as the best the match of the night.
All right, Scott,
I'll go with the title match. I'll go with the title match.
Okay. All right, worst match of the night. It's sad because it really was pretty good, like we talked about. Just again, these shows always have such limited options, but LOD versus Orient Express.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I feel like the MVP is a pretty layup choice tonight, too. That, I mean, to me, it's Hogan. I thought and Slaughter was close, but it was Hogan's night. I mean, the whole show was completely built around him. We saw him like five times. He was in the opener, then he comes out with Duggan, then he saves Duggan, then he gets interviewed. You know, like he's all over the show. It's all about rebuilding him as the top contender and the top guy in the promotion. So,
agreed.
Yeah. No, he's the man right now. Yeah.
All right. Worst worker, Dino Bravo. I think
Dino Bravo.
Choice.
Emeritus.
Worst ruler.
best moments.
Worst ruler.
I went with the Sarge Duggan post match. You could probably also go with the Hogan interview. It was good too, but I thought the post match beatdown with Sarge got some heat on Hogan to get the feud going was good.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'll go with that. But honorable mention to Tugboat posing in the ring with Hogan. I'm telling you, that is always awesome.
That's great.
All right, the Warrior Award most juiced up to me was Dino Bravo tonight.
Yeah, the juice was coming out of his mouth apparently too. He was leaking it.
No Warlord, no Bulldog, no Hercules, and no Warrior. So Bravo. Choice to me.
I'm gonna go with Jack Tunney. You could just yeah, of course, Bravo.
It's interesting too. We didn't really mention it, but no Warrior or Savage like anywhere on this show. And given that the match they're going to be building toward, and even that stuff we just saw on the house show, it's interesting that there's like barely, I guess we got the one promo piece, but that was more around Slaughter winning the title. It's interesting that there was like nothing from them at all in this show. I know they're squeezed for room, but.
They probably don't want to confuse the issue with the main event, and they figure, well, we got about 6 weeks of TV to
plenty
build
of time
the other thing.
It.
Yeah.
All right, Rooster Award for the worst hair, Peter. I think we know your choice is Jack Tunney, it sounds like.
Oh yeah. God, right. He needed a haircut in the worst way.
I went with Sarge.
Yeah, nobody else. What?
Why? His hair was terrible. He's got that bald thing.
The guy has the least hair. The least hair has the worst hair.
Yeah, it looks like shit.
It was a little snarly for somebody that doesn't have much, but yeah. This is a tough one. I'm going to flip a coin. Yeah, I'll go with Tunney. That fluff looked a little rough.
All right, and final grade. This is a pretty down the middle episode. I went 5.5. I mean, there was some good, some shaky, just kind of there. I look at it like, could this show not exist and things be fine? Probably yes. Like nothing really happened. Like they could have done the Hogan announcement on Superstars and just moved along. But it was a fun watch. It's a quick watch. Gets you in the mood to get fired up for 7. So it did its job there. So it felt effective. A little better than average. 5.5 for me.
I'll give it a 6. It was entertaining for a quick 1 hour burst. I love announcements. You know, as much as we make fun of Jack Tunney, you know, half delivering the lines right and not going to the barber. It does feel special when he's there because you know it's something like legit that you're going to want to hear. And, you know, getting that moment, like you said, they don't really push big storyline moments on Science Main Event or the Main Event. They usually save them for the Cindies. But it was cool to see Tunney on the show. The three matches were fine. They all served their purposes. Slaughter was hot with his promos. Hogan was good with his promos. I give it a 6.
I'm going 5 out of 10, so just a touch below. But I finally realized the reason why Jack Tunney's hair was the way that it looked. And it's because, remember, Beefcake isn't there anymore, so there's no barber.
Can't give him a trim.
Service Tunney.
There's no company barber.
All right. That'll do it for tonight. Fun episode as always. Scott will be back next week for our third straight episode here, looking at the March 15th, 1991 house show, and then 2 weeks after that, we're on the doorstep of Mania with our Superstars and Strikes Forever episode. So lots going on here at the Place to Be podcast. Back on track. Lots going on this feed. Be sure to check it out each and every day. Cool shows dropping with the variants of hosts and guests. And subscribe on all Podcatcher apps. Same goes to the North-South Connection podcast feed. Lots going on there, too. Of course, dropping pretty much shows, you know, 5 to 6 days a week. covering all the span of topic. We're looking at TNA from 02, WWE from 02, the Monday Night Wars, mid-90s ECW. We got some comic stuff. A lot of cool things going on. So subscribe to both. Facebook.com/NorthSouthConnection. Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation. Sky, anything you want to mention just going on?
Like I said, it'll be another great. We had a great week on the PTB Wrestling Network. More good stuff this week. I believe another Highway to the Impact Zone will drop, and just great shows. This show, of course, is the Mothership main event, and all the other great stuff as well. So, subscribe and enjoy.
Peter,
greetings from Allentown. Thursdays on my own feed, looking at random weeks of. Random episodes of episodic television, usually 1 hour in length. Not the show. My show usually goes about 1 hour 15. Also, GFA Live, a project that I've started on the weekend with my good pal Keith. We're going through the best of the WWF Coliseum videos, and the latest one is Volume 20. And some of these things are just doozies, and it's interesting to look at how they evolved from the beginning, where it's just Vince standing in front of a few monitors, to the end where they're coming up with all sorts of goofy stuff and Mean Gene's hitting on concession workers in Glens Falls, New York, or something like that. So do check that out. Give me a follow on Twitter at GF Allentown Pod.
All right, very good. That'll do it. Talk to you next week. Everyone, take care.